Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have back as a return guest contributor to the podcast, Heather Pillar. Heather Pillar, photographer and teacher, has lived, taught, and photographed in 7 countries over 4 continents during the past 27 years. Her personal and collaborative photographic projects reveal her ongoing interest in women, girls' education, and aging. In 1995, Heather collaborated with Maury Schwartz during the last 6 months as he battled ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Her first monograph, Memento Mori, Images of Loss and Love, published by Daylight Books in 2024, illustrates Maury's philosophies through photographs of him interacting with family, friends, and caregivers in building community. And over a quarter of a century later, Maury's wisdom still resonates with people around the world due to the best-selling memoir, Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom. Maury taught people, including Heather, how to live fulfilling lives with love. And it is by facing fears of death that we learn how to live, which is one of many of Maury's aphorisms as we've come to affectionately know them by. So, but with that, Heather, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm excited to have you back as a return guest contributor today.
Thank you, Dave. And I'm so honored to be back. Thank you so much for this new opportunity.
Well, you're welcome. I think we had such a great conversation the first time, just talking about your photographic journey in general, and in particularly your work with Maury Schwartz during his end-of-life chapter in 1995, which resulted in the aforementioned monograph, Memento Mori. So tell our audience what you've been up to since then, what's been going on, and what projects have fueled your passion, and just what's going on in general.
So I do go and speak occasionally about Maury and what I learned from him with book talks at libraries. And I am coming to New Hartford Library November 9th. That's exciting. That's a Sunday and it's 3 to 4:30. And there's a link on the library website as well as on my website, heatherpillar.com. Last week I spoke with Rob Schwartz. He edited Maury's manuscript that he found. It's called The Wisdom of Maury, and he was on as well with you, Dave. Rob and I do well together. We speak sometimes occasionally, but he lives in LA. I live on Cape Cod, and so whenever he comes back east is pretty much when we try and arrange a speaking engagement for that. And I have a couple of shows and other talks coming up. I do show my photographs of Maury. I think the last time we spoke was in May, so I spoke at the Newton Free Library. Newton is kind of where it all started. That's where Maury lived. So I had I spoke at the gala event, and I spoke and I showed my photographs. And so they're very well received, and it's my photographs paired with Maury's aphorisms and some of the short stories. And it's really just a beautiful, very heartwarming, even though it's about death, it's really about life and love. And between those things, I'm teaching photography and design. And I also rent out my house, you know, just coming back to Cape Cod, coming back home from being overseas. It's always trying to fit in and find building community. It's all the stuff that Maury got. It's in the back of my mind, family, friends, and just a feeling like this is the place I belong.
Yeah, and certainly one of his biggest philosophies, the biggest part of his philosophy was building community. And that's something that, you know, we're seeing it coming more and more and more for individuals who need to transcend loss, who need to transcend challenges, or just need the support during downtimes. And he said this on my podcast and other podcasts, human beings aren't meant to live in isolation. We need community during good and bad times. So that's one of the things that came out loud and clear in his discussions with Mitch Albom and in subsequent writings that I was able to discover after his death. So also through Rob's work too with the Wisdom of Maury.
With Maury, he said it back in 95, but then really COVID happened. And I think we now have a lot more evidence about what that feels like to be alone.
Yep.
Yeah. And be lonely and alone and isolated and not really good for us. Exactly.
Yeah. And as a college professor, I saw what that isolation did to the incoming freshmen at Utica University during the time of COVID. And freshman year is a time where you want to build community. You need to build community as part of that whole adjustment to college life. And you can't do that through the internet. You can't through Zoom conversations. It's just not the same.
Yeah, and I stayed here especially because my daughters were in one in high school and one in college. And I don't know if Utica went back to in person, but University of Massachusetts Amherst did not. And it was like, well, I can't go back overseas then. So. Mm. So that was difficult. I just was like, I can't do that. So, but yeah, it had consequences.
For sure. And I hope we never see that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at least in my lifetime, I hope that never happens again. So.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we wanted to kind of get into today was one of your projects, which I know you have been really excited about and passionate about, is building a caring community. A teacher's journey in service learning. So when did this all occur and what inspired you to take on the project?
Well, so I would love to be sharing since I'm a photographer and very visual, I'm going to share. So it started out actually with, this is from Bangladesh when I lived there. And so that was really the start of building a caring community in schools. But just to go back even further than even Maury, how it all started was me being curious. So I was a news photographer in Boston, outside of Boston in Marlborough, working at daily newspapers. I worked for United Press International too, but this was really about community. And I'm sad to see daily newspapers really like have taken a hit. And I really enjoyed my time as a photographer, and I had a lot of freedom to be able to do some self-assigned projects. And so some of the things that I assigned myself was learning about the WIC program, Women, Infants, Children. And so this was like circa 1992. And then so just following this family around for maybe a day. And then I wrote the story, I think. And then I also wrote this story, and this is about addiction. And that's getting a lot more, like people are learning much more about it. But so this was eye-opening for me that, you know, I think it was 60 to 80% of people who go through such programs, and they're very good, still go back on drugs and alcohol. And so it's definitely like what keeps you. And the 12-step program, which is part of this, is really beneficial. That is what works. And it's about higher power, whatever you think your higher power is.
Yeah.
But believing in that. And then I really enjoyed this project, and it was so long ago, I can't remember how I came to it. But this sweet woman, Charlotte, she found her community. And so this place called Employment Options. And I love that she says, if it wasn't for employment options, I wouldn't know anything about computers. I typed the options newsletter, announcements, and house meeting notes. And she was trained by the employment options, and she's working on a computer. And the photos show community. She's bowling. She's going on, she's in a bus to go somewhere. I mean, it's a place for mental health, for people with mental health issues. And she really, there's a community, there's a place that works for her, and she's learning. And it's really wonderful. So anyway, that I checked actually, and I see employment options is still going, doing fairly well, I guess, in at least they're not out of business in Marlborough, Massachusetts. And then how I started, then at Brandeis University, I moved to Brandeis and I self-assigned more stories. So I photographed swimmers, and that was about community. It was above and below, I called it. So I photographed them swimming, diving. So it was below the water, but it was also above ground. And I went to some of their parties, and it was just kind of interesting and fun to photograph. I'd been out of being an undergrad for quite some time, and so it was kind of fun to see the undergrad life at Brandeis. And then I was invited to Grenada, and so that's Grenada here, and by a professor, and she, who is Grenadian, and she wanted to talk about sustainable ways in which parents could live on island versus most go overseas because they need to make a living. And so the grandmothers are raising their grandchildren. So I think the statistic was somewhere around like near 50% are over the age of 65 and near 50% are under the age of 15. And so that leaves so little in the room in the middle there to be a parent. And so a whole generation overseas, it's, I don't know what it is now. This was 1994 or 95. So anyway, there were starting businesses. This is drying fruit up on the rooftop. Obviously, fishing would be part of the sustainability. And there's a lot of very rich yachts that come into Grenada even back then. And so I imagine that it's even more like that.
So when they ask you, Heather, about the grandmothers raising their grandchildren, was that an expectation of the culture, or was it out of just necessity or other type of challenges that were going on within the families that you discovered?
I think it was out of necessity. If you can't make any money enough to really have any kind of lifestyle, and then, you know, it's close to come to like Florida or someplace like that and get a job in some way and then send the money home, that was not preferable, but that was just more lucrative than staying in Grenada. So how to build up economy in different places. So that's an important thing. And I mean, I just scratched the surface. I was there for like less than a week, but it was my professor's insight, and she's Grenadian. And actually, I really like this picture, as I always have. It says, "Never again slavery." It's a poster. But we just had this discussion with this woman, and I remember seeing the vivid colors and thinking, I mean, that is just really, really powerful, actually.
Yeah, that look says it all. I mean, intense, reflective. Yeah. You really captured her right in the moment image.
Yeah. But she was not talking about slavery at all. It's just, this is always in the background. And maybe that has a lot to do with why the economy in the Caribbean is so, you know, well, it's obviously going to be touristy, but there's like Haiti, for example, just the gangs and all the problems that there are. Stability has been really difficult in many of these islands. So,
you know, yeah, I'm sorry, but I had to say this before I forgot. I think we also bring our histories, our collective histories of our cultures into any interaction with each other. And I think we need to respect that. And I think we can build a caring community if we can change the history between us one interaction at a time.
Yes, right. That is really, that's important. And actually, it's one of my takeaways from like living overseas is just how kind and sweet the vast majority of people are. And I think there's such fear of the other and without knowing, you're making a lot of assumptions. So this is in Taiwan. And so, yeah, after my time at Brandeis and I got my graduate degree there, I moved overseas to Taiwan and I photographed and I took students out and about. And this is like going out into the local community. It was really safe. I didn't have to do too many hoops to get kids out the door at that time. And this is way before like school shootings. And this was just, it was wonderful. It was a lot of fun to just go out and teach students photography and I taught them also like to go and talk to people, not to be afraid of people too. And at the same time, so then we had moved. So these are, it's my family. My daughters are now 26 and 23. So this was quite some time ago. And we lived in Germany. And so one daughter was born in Taiwan, one daughter was born in Germany. And so really very busy. And so parenthood, making a living, and then trying to figure out like my place in all these different cultures. And so then moving to Dhaka, Bangladesh is where I really started thinking about community and how to involve students. So now I'm teaching second grade and fifth grade, and I was asked to photograph for this book, which was a fundraiser for, it was for a school called ABC School, which is still going strong. And it was started by a woman who noticed that there were street children on her street. And so she started feeding them and then gave them a place to clean up, like take baths, and then she started educating them. So it's Eglal's ABC School for street children. And so they eventually got a place, a school. And this book is actually about 10 girls. So my friend and principal, her name is Julia Alden. She was the one who came up with this idea. And the idea was to interview the 10 girls, and then she wanted me to photograph their lives, mm-hmm. basically. And then Nora Graham, who was the art teacher, she was the one who had them draw pictures. And then this book was put together and we sold it so that it raised money so that they could buy a school. It helped raise the funds to buy a school so that it wasn't prone to flooding. This photograph is really one of my favorites of all time. It's actually on my business card, and it's showing a girl going to the showers and a window open with a cleaning woman. And you can see that she's moving her arm. And I just think that the whole, like, it's preventing, it's about education. It's education is really everything. And ways in which we can help everybody, not just girls, but everybody, and the barriers to that. And it really makes a big difference in your lives overall. And speaking of not having education and what happens then, the fate of the poor women in Bangladesh, this is a hard picture to take, but I had noticed this woman, she's an older woman, breaking bricks on the streets of Dhaka. And why do you break bricks? And she gets about a dollar a day. And the whole reason is because it's from the Himalayas, it's all the runoff from the Himalayas. So again, there's not a rock to be found in Dhaka because it's all basically sand and silt. And so in order to build things, you need bricks. And so that's why she's breaking them, so that you can build something else, because there is clay and there's a lot of clay kilns that you can find around Dhaka, and manual labor. If you can imagine doing that, that's your job for 8 hours a day. It's just heartbreaking as well as backbreaking.
And, you know, it's also informative because a lot of individuals will complain about what they don't have. And if I saw a picture like this, I would have immediate gratitude for what I do have.
Yes, right. Yeah. So I just felt like more people needed to see this.
Yeah.
So back to ABC school, and that is only a K through five school. And then they go to another school and they're dressed in these white uniforms. The other ones were the orange and blue uniforms. But I just really adore these girls, and they're hugging and smiling. And so this is her family. I'll just read it. It says, "My father is a cook. My mother is ill. My two sisters both studied at madrasa and both memorized the Quran and both are married. My older brother is looking for a job and my younger brother goes to ABC school." And she, you know, the whole idea is like, what are their hopes and dreams? And so a lot of these girls, when we interviewed them, they said they'd help others. So it was about being a nurse or a doctor or a teacher. It was what they could see, but it was always very caring and sweet. And here's another one of those, just a very sweet, spontaneous photograph of the three girls laughing, smiling, and a big hug. And it's a safe space. That's the idea, is to have a space to gather and learn. And I'm sad to see all these, the school shootings and everything, that is not feeling safe. And so this is back in 2007. And actually, I have to say that there were guns everywhere in the streets in Dhaka, but they were kind of rusted out, a lot of them. And so, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it made a huge difference. But anyway, it's hard to say about the different governments. And now the government in Bangladesh is, again, there's a lot of turmoil. And I think there's elections coming up. The interim person, Muhammad Yunus, is, I think he is planning to step down. He does not want to run. I think I heard that the other day.
Yeah, that seems to be endemic in a lot of our politics around the country. I mean, a lot of longtime servants or public servants are quitting. And I think just over the frustration over just the way government has progressed over the years. So,
well, I think there might be a sea change. I don't know. It does feel like there's something in the air. So,
yeah.
This is about Mabia and her friend Mariam in their neighborhood. And so you can have a look at what that neighborhood looks like. And, you know, that feels not that safe. So you'll notice Mabia has it's a traditional scarf that goes around, and she's wearing it correctly, like in front, and then usually the onu, and it comes down the back. So she always is covering her arm. And the reason why is she fell out of a tree at age 9 and her elbow was dislocated. And so there was no access to healthcare and her arm was amputated. And this saddens me so much that there's no access to healthcare. And my daughter tripped over. She tripped in our backyard and also dislocated her elbow, but I was able to take her to the hospital. And I know she was in a lot of pain, but she was probably like 6 years old at the time. And doctors came in and they just put her to sleep for 30 seconds and put her elbow back together and then woke her up. And it took like less than a minute, and then put her in a cast for 3 weeks, and she's been absolutely fine. So I think it's just sad not to have access to healthcare. And so this is probably, for me, it's a very powerful picture.
Yeah.
So how do you get community in? And so we're really talking kind of rich and poor and so many things, and how would they meet? And so what we did, not just me, sort of the community at the American International School of Dhaka, we invited students to play at the Saturday school We arranged a yard sale where students brought in things and let the ABC school students buy them with chits. And then there were some community lunches and things like that. So these are the ABC school students playing on the facilities at the American International School of DACA.
Now, what are chits?
Oh, it's something for money. Like, it's just a piece of paper, but it might say, this is worth a dollar, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard that term before.
Oh, really? What would you call it?
I would call it either an IOU or a promise of services to be made later. That's what I would call it. But
oh, okay. The U.S. does that sort of thing. You know, you put some money down and you get that for like a drink or something. I don't know. That's what I call it. Or a ticket. I guess a ticket, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know, Heather. I think I've led an isolated life, so. I'll have to expand my horizons more.
Yeah. Again, this is one of those walks home, and it's just the joy of it all. And so this is coming back from Saturday Play Day, and you can see some people in the background. That's Nora with the hat on, and she is, you can't really see her, but then Augustine, who really helped us a lot with translation and just a wonderful person. And then I moved to Tanzania. And in Tanzania, a couple of wonderful, initiatives, no shortage of ways to get involved. The Global Issues Network, or the Global Issues Service Summit, so that would be about getting a whole conference together. And so students prepare for this, and they come and they bring global research presentations and workshops, and it's very student driven. So hands-on workshops and speakers. And so you can see that this was some activity with well-being and social emotional, and so putting little something about them, these things too, like how can we make it better? So lots of ideas flying around, which is the point of conferences, to go back energized. And so for speakers, Ishmael Bea is a Sierra Leonean. He was a child soldier and just horrible. Just his story is called, he's the author of A Long Way Gone. And Bea believed that he said returning to civilized society was more difficult than the act of becoming a child soldier, saying that dehumanizing children is a relatively easy task. And so keeping that in mind, it's pretty easy to like manipulate and overpower children, and they will do what they can to survive. And so that was he has written about it, and he's written some other books too, but now he's a wonderful speaker too. So it's just horribly sad to hear these stories. And then hands-on workshops. So this was like picking up trash, and this is from the beach. So there's a flip-flop, a broken flip-flop. What can you do with it? And it's a bit of a band-aid to pick up trash, because then there's more trash coming the next day. So how do you stop the trash? And that's really kind of like the awareness of how much there actually is. And then there's the, what can we do about it? And so you can make art out of recycling, but I think stopping the trash in the first place is really how to clean up. And it's not just in the sea, but on land and in the sky. And so really thinking about what we're doing to our environment. And these students, this is how to get them thinking about that.
Yeah, and I think great art makes a statement. Great art can, regardless of the form of creativity, can lend a lot of insight or thought to social issues, climate change, a variety of different things that we grapple with as a society. So I think it's a great creative vehicle and a great visual means to really convey those issues.
Yeah. And so getting out of the classroom and getting, like everybody goes, especially in Dar es Salaam, you might go to the beach, but are you picking up the trash? Are you really going to the places where there are, where there is trash? I mean, there's many factors involved in seeing, in really seeing what it looks like and where it is and why it is, and really starting to ask those kinds of questions.
And I really like the fact that the projects were student-driven. It gives the students a sense of say, a sense of a buy-in to a particular project. And also it's empowering, particularly when they're living in circumstances where, in many cases, there's poverty, there's little or no access to health care, and they're living under very challenging circumstances every day. So every opportunity we have to empower those who are disadvantaged, I think, makes a difference.
Yeah, and it's not just, I mean, I know I'm, it's very visual here in developing countries, but still, I don't think I'd have to go so far here in the U.S., and that's the kind of the point. I was in Marlborough, Massachusetts, and still documenting issues, and so it's not like it's over there. So this is about another wonderful way to build community. So Wonder Workshop, Wonder Welders, employs disabled people. And so this is about creating art out of found objects, and it's very successful. There are many people doing this kind of, you know, work, maybe not an an elephant of this size, but yeah, this is... you know, what do we do with this kind of, you know, trash and so the creativity of it and the community spirit of it, plus having it be a business, which I think is fairly successful. It's definitely one of the highlights of being in Dar es Salaam. And so now we're moving into kind of another area, which is when I started teaching in middle and high school. And so the IB Interbaccalaureate program, and had you heard of it before?
Never heard of it.
Okay. So this is an international program, and it's recognized, and that's why it's very popular in the international schools that I've been in. So because the curriculum is more in general, like, you know, pretty much what a student has gone through in order to be at that level. It's not for everybody. This is definitely a challenging curriculum. And AP is like more a la carte. You can choose to have an advanced placement. Maybe more of the listeners are familiar with AP, but Interbaccalaureate program, the IB program, is pretty well recognized. And sometimes you can place out of college courses because you've taken an because you have the IB diploma. And so there's a component that is essential. It's called community service in action, and it's required in grades 11 and 12. But what we discovered is that we needed to build up to that because students had difficulty when they reached 11 and 12, because there's quite a bit of documentation and service hours. And so trying to build that into your daily student life was what we decided to do when I worked at Escola Americana de Campinas, which is the school in Campinas, Brazil. So students chose groups based on interests, so not necessarily in their friend group, although of course they did. And the idea was to mix up the grades, and then they would interact in an activity. I organized who chose what, and I was a co-coordinator with a Brazilian colleague. And so my group, we decided to, there's a warehouse, and so we found these shelves, and we decided that we would paint them. And so that's what we did. We painted the shelves from the warehouse because I'm an art teacher after all. And then we collected books at the right age level, and we read to students. And so this was probably like over a few years. 2 years, and then reading to the, this is like the best picture because it's like the students just loved both from both ends. My students loved it, and whenever we came to the local school and read to them, they just loved it. They wanted us to come back, and it was just such a community builder. So really great ideas. I did vermicomposting as well. So this is worms. I mean, there's a sort of sweet spot where, like, you know, if you're in elementary school, you think worms are cool. And then in middle school, you're like, oh, gross. But actually, it was really great because it's another way to reduce waste and think about the environment. And we brought in this man here, an expert. So he came in and showed us about worms and what all he knew. We also had a good amount of Korean population at the school, about 15% Korean. And so we were talking about what we could do about food. And one of the things that is really good for the environment is actually meatless Mondays, like going vegetarian or vegan even. And so we explored these ideas, and my Korean student said, there's a lot of Korean foods that are not that heavy on the meat. And so maybe, and we would love to have more Korean food in the cafe and introduce our culture to the rest of the school community. And so we came up with a chef and food service. We came up with recipes so that, and they did that every, there was a Korean entree at least once or twice a week. And then, of course, there's bugs. And so this was kind of my idea. I just ordered some and said, here, try these. And it got people to go like thumbs up. Oh, they're so good. It's the idea, like, you can pretty much, if you sort of freeze dry anything, it would taste okay. And you put a little spices on it. But anyway, it's crickets and bugs and with coconut brittle, chili lime, with pumpkin seeds and spicy burritos. So anyway, it was just a fun experiment, and it'll take me a little while before I'm ordering bugs. But have you tried?
I think I tried a chocolate covered grasshopper once.
What'd you think?
Actually, it wasn't bad, Heather. I heard it was a good source of protein. Now, I don't know if I'd repeat it again, but it wasn't bad for the time that I tried it. But you know, I think it's good to expand your horizons and try different things. I mean, what sounds to be kind of on the surface disgusting or something you wouldn't think you'd want to do actually doesn't turn out to be that bad. So it's good to explore a little bit. And even if you find out you don't like it, you've explored it anyway.
Absolutely. Give it a try. Don't knock it till you try it.
Well, you know, I tell my students, whatever your core beliefs are, consciously look at something or examine something that contradicts your core beliefs and see if some aspects of what you're looking into that contradict your core belief initially can actually be incorporated to expand your belief system. But you're not going to know unless you look at it first.
Yeah. So anyway, my little experiment, it was fine. It went well. So this is what we, pretty much every school that I've taught at, we talk about what attributes do we want students to have at the end. And so this is my current school at Monomoy. Shout out to Monomoy Regional High School here in Chatham. It's in Harwich, Massachusetts, Harwich and Chatham. And so it's creative and critical thinker, communication and leader, engaged citizen, independent and confident learner. So these kind of fit in, and you know, IB has a whole learner profile of 10 categories, which are communicator, the critical thinker, creative. It's all these same words. And so, but again, like, what will you remember? The things that you remember when you were, you know, like, what sticks with you? What did you actually learn in school? And so I still maintain that you learn best when you're doing things. Yes. And when you are, you know, of course, it's important to learn all this hard, and it's hard to learn. Let's not forget that it's it's a lot of brain power, and it's hard for students to, and harder for some than others. But what do you remember in the end? What do you come away with? And so I think we need to really lean back into these things, and the empathy, and the way to do that is, one of the ways is to incorporate basically building a caring community. And so the Harley School in Rochester, New York, they came to Cape Cod, and I was so happy to, so I spoke about Memento Mori, my work project with Mori Schwartz, my book. And they basically are this group, and it's a seminar series. And they came, I mean, Rochester, New York to Cape Cod, and they spent, it was a retreat, and they came here because there is a, it's a compassionate care ALS is in Falmouth, Massachusetts, and they met with ALS, people with ALS and their families to learn about caregiving. And it was definitely building empathy. And these were the sweetest, most wonderful students. And I just know that they will go forth in the world and just do amazing things because they, partially because of this seminar. And so they have the WISE curriculum. So it's about, and the things that they did, weekly sessions, buzzed with conversations, games, and collaborative activities. So that sounds like fun. This doesn't sound like a test or anything like that. And yet they're learning. They're learning to embrace differences, practice mindfulness, and sharpen social emotional skills, and awaken their generous hearts. And then it goes on to say perspective taking, experiential activities, finding common ground, and reflection and planning. And so all of that really just cross-generational. They went to nursing homes. And so that was another thing that they did in Rochester. So that brings me kind of full circle, because that's what Memento Mori is kind of all about. So he was talking about building a caring community. And this is my book that came out last year, July 2024. And it's published by Daylight Books, which did a beautiful job. There's 44 photographs of Mori. I documented Mori for 6 months. And the photographs are categorized into the themes of family, friends, caregiving, spirituality, self-care, death and beyond, and also, of course, building a caring community. And so here's the photograph for building a caring community. And this is Mori. He's on a phone, and his friends are all around, and they're doing various things. And this is before a talk. They were all going to get together and talk in a group about death and spirituality. And then I love this photograph because it really is about the whole essence of life. In the beginning and at the end of life, we need others to survive. But here's the secret: in between, we need others as well. So I know people sometimes think, oh, I don't need anybody. But I think we really do need to build bridges. And so back to my talk, Sunday, November 9th. At the New Hartford Public Library, and there is a registration button. These are my photographs. I will put up a mini exhibition similar to this. So that has, you know, the photographs are meant to go along with either an aphorism, because Mori, that's what he wanted. So when I asked to photograph him, the project we came up with that we agreed to was my photographs paired with his aphorisms, and he wanted to see the show before he died. And so that happened. He died in November 4th, and the show, I was able to put it up in September, 6 weeks or so before he died. He didn't make it to the show because he was, but I took pictures and let him know, and I had a sign-in book as well. It's really beautiful, and so many people just were very moved, and I think continue to be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of his aphorisms, a lot of his philosophy, I mean, you could see that play out in the work that you did with the Building a Caring Community project. You could see all of that really just manifest. A lot of what he's talked about is timeless. it can go on from generation to generation. It's still going to have applicability.
It's coming up on 30 years. November 4th is 30 years since Maury passed.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I mean, really, it seemed like, you know, the Tuesdays with Maury just came out. And, you know, that book is, I think, 38 years old now.
And, it's 28.
I'm sorry. I was thinking it was 97, not 87. Math wasn't one of my strong points in school either. So, it was 97. It was 28 years. But yeah, it's just hard to believe it's been out that long. But my students have told me the messages in that book are timeless. I mean, you could throw that book in a time capsule. Somebody's going to pick it up and it's going to have applicability. I did want to ask you one thing about the International Baccalaureate. Do we have anything that's remotely similar to that or has aspects of that in the United States educational system?
Well, so for example, there are two schools here on Cape Cod that do run the IB program. It's not very, I think, as my understanding is, it's not that popular. First of all, because it's a lot. It's a lot to run. It's expensive in some ways. But in the international circles, it really, like my daughters both graduated with the IB diploma. And they complained a lot also, but they're better for it in a lot of ways. But so the AP has like, it's basically what you're interested in, and then you can do an advanced placement. And you could choose to be advanced placement in, you know, say, so the IB is 6 subjects, and you do a higher level, it's called higher level, in 3 subjects. But in 6 subjects, but the thing that I think is really wonderful is there's a course called Theory of Knowledge. So it's about how do you know what you know? And like, who's telling you? So it's a little bit of critical thinking. Well, a lot of critical thinking, basically. And then the other thing is the community service and I think they're calling it activity versus action. But anyway, it's the idea of you are doing a project that is outside of school and you're documenting it. And it's not so much about the hours as it is about the quality of it. Yep. It used to be about hours. Now it's more about the quality. And so it's basically self-assigning, like what I was doing, self-assigning projects to yourself. And you can do it in community. You can do it, you could start something, but you're kind of taking initiative. And that's what you want, and being curious and running into like, you know, personalities or issues and how would you get help? And it's all about that. Sort of putting yourself out there is really what it is.
Yeah, and I think that's important because we learn by putting ourselves out there. We learn about ourselves, and we learn about ourselves in relationship to the world around us when we're in community.
Right, yeah.
One other thing that I saw, and I think it was in your initial notes that you sent me about the project, was the concept of service learning. Can you talk about how embracing the concept of service learning could improve the quality of education in our schools and educational outcomes in our schools?
Well, I think that there's a good amount of evidence now about how creating service learning, which is building empathy, and how that is a good way to have people go out into the world. Public school education is really valuable because there's not turning people away who can't afford it, who might be disabled in some way. You are with people of all stripes and you need to learn to get along and some skills for that. And I have to say that, because now I've worked in 2 different public schools and I think that they're really wonderful and teaching is hard. I have to say that too. So shout out to teachers. And I think we really need to, you know, build up. I think teachers have gotten such a bad rap lately and it's undeserved. It's caregiving and it really is. And teachers care about the future, our students. They care about everybody's children. And I think that I'm sad to see funding go away. Like actually in Needham, the art was being decreased basically. So they're down a teacher from where they were. And that means that there's more students in the classes that they are. And so it's just a lot. It's piling on more and more. And I think that we need to really think about what we teach and how we teach it. But I want to say that I think public school is so worth it. So.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. Teachers get a bad rap. And as a professor myself, I know the amount of work we put into it. And I know the importance that I place on how I teach, what I teach, and how I inspire my students. That's going to make a difference in terms of how they make their mark in the world. So it isn't just about imparting information. It's helping create great citizens.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, like just, but we're constantly revising. Like everybody's revising. It's not stagnant. So I think there's a lot to, but the answer is not getting rid of public schools.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't, but well, this was a great exhibition, great project that you shared, some great photos, great images, great takeaways. So is there anything else, Heather, that you want to leave our listeners with today? Any one other ultimate takeaway that you want to leave our listeners with today?
I think it's a great note to try something a little new and try, you know, open up, especially try something more friendly towards another person, especially in this era of suspicion. And I think that people in general are very kind.
Yes.
So.
I don't think we were born mean. I think we were born with kindness. And then, you know, as we kind of live life and experience our own challenges, that changed us a little bit, maybe hardened us and in some ways, and kind of masked the fact that we are at the core truly loving human beings. So, Heather, and also, by the way, I got to mention New Hartford, New York. I know you have an upstate New York connection here. I know you have family here. I'm personally looking forward to meeting you in person on Sunday for the exhibition.
Yeah. And I hope anybody here listening is able to come out and would love to see you. Maybe register at the New Hartford Public Library. So it's November 9th, 3 to 4:45 p.m.
You got it. And I'll make sure all of that gets in the episode notes. In addition to how to contact you or purchase Memento Mori, what's the best way for them to do that, Heather?
So on my website, which is www.heatherpillar.com, so it's Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, and then Pillar, P-I-L-L-A-R.com. And then there's my email, which is heather@heatherpillar.com.
Yeah, and all of that obviously will be on the in the YouTube version of the podcast, all of your contact information, as well as in the episode notes on all my podcast platforms. So, Heather, with that, thank you so much once again for a great conversation, sharing your wisdom, sharing your work with my audience. And I look forward to future conversations.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you for the opportunity, Dave, and I can't wait to meet you in person in a few weeks.
You got it. With that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.